Good evening and welcome to Yada Yahoo Radio, our Shabbat program. I hope that I'm the only one that hears the Morse code playing in the background, but it certainly is an interesting...
I'm hearing it over this way.
It's fairly distracting, but we will do our best to hunt through it. Hi, Larry.
Hi. Well, what is going on with that?
I do not
you
know.
You hit it on the... That's the best way to describe it.
Yeah, it certainly seems like Morse code. As I was preparing for this evening, you know, it's always a good idea to read through the material we're going to cover, so you know, you have a higher likelihood of saying things that are consistent with Yahweh's intent, which is really a good idea when you're going to cover his word. I was thinking, okay, here's Dode celebrating his relationship that we're going to cover for those who are interested, the nun stanza in the 119th Psalm begins around 105th verse. And the nun is about seed. The nun is drawn as a seed taking root. Seed, zera, which is actually the Hebrew word for seed, also speaks of offspring, being part of a family, expanding a family. And so I was just pondering, okay, the benefits of the covenant are pretty spectacular. Benefits are we become immortal. You know, 70 years is the kind of right around the average life expectancy of a good life. After that time, life typically goes downhill in terms of the quality of it for anywhere from 5 to 10 years for most people. But 7 years of good living, all right, that's pretty good. Immortality, I mean, that's a big deal. And then you get perfection. I can tell you that I'm reasonably flawed. I got lots of things that are less than perfect. And so perfection is really quite appealing to me. I had such an issue with my father threatening me that I had to get a restraining order against him. Otherwise, my wife and my children would have left because he was so menacing. So, you know, in a very real way, I was orphaned. And so being adopted into a loving family is a really big deal to me. I am almost crazy about knowing, being aware, becoming enlightened, being enriched by knowledge and understanding is important to me. That's the fourth benefit of the covenant. And being empowered, this idea of we're so limited now. We have this magnificent universe and magnificent world even. And yet there's so little of it we can actually see and understand, and our minds are so incapable of soaking it all in. And so those are the benefits of the covenant. So the question I was posing to myself when I put it in the chat room, would you accept the terms and conditions of the covenant, all five of them, if the only benefit in doing so was knowing Yahweh in this mortal existence and having a much more appropriate, much more accurate understanding and thus therefore perspective on life and the world that we live in? Would you do it if that's all you got out of it, was you got to know God in this mortal existence and your understanding and perspective was vastly more accurate than the preponderance of people? Would you do it?
My answer to that would be yes. And you got to understand, too, that if people would be honest, most people would say yes to that.
Yeah, I think they would.
And here's why.
Okay.
Even religion, which everybody knows is fraudulent, is predicated on, God taking care of you, right?
Right.
While you're on earth.
Right.
I mean, really. That's what most people are really looking for. You know, they're not even looking past that. They might be looking for, you know, I don't have to die because I'm afraid to die like billions of other people have done.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest deal with religion. I think the biggest deal with religion
is
primarily they don't want to go to hell, and so they'll be part of the religion to maximize their likelihood they won't go to hell. And the second is that so much of life is unexplainable. If you don't know what we're talking about here, if you really don't know who Yahweh is and why he created the universe, if you don't have the Torah's perspective, so much of life is unexplainable, and religion attempts to make things that people can't understand make sense so they can deal with it. I think those are the two big issues.
You got to win the football game too, Yada. You know, and the boxing match and all the rest.
Yeah, you've got to explain why little children die, and you've got to explain why somebody else wins the lottery, and you have to explain why one team wins the game versus the other team, and the like. Now, keep in mind that I didn't say, would you accept the covenant? Even if the only two benefits were the two that aren't even specified, coming to know who Yahweh is and engaging in a relationship with him during your mortal existence, and having a more accurate understanding of the world, of the universe. Without doing away with any of the five requirements, you still got all five requirements. So to have this temporary relationship with Yahweh, and to have a clear understanding of the universe, you're going to have to disassociate from politics and patriotism and militarism and economic schemes and all religion and governance. So you're going to be isolated to a large degree. Would you be willing to do that?
Maybe not. Maybe. Yeah, I would. Yeah, I would if I actually got to know the creator of the universe. Yeah, I would. I would. Sure.
Yeah, I would too, but you know, the reason is perhaps that realization that came to, and I think we did it collectively, months ago, that in reality, the conditions for participating in the covenant, including the first one, which is gargantuan initially, is actually a benefit. Mm-hmm. You know, today, to trust your government is counterproductive. Today, to rely on your religion is nothing but false hope. It's really mean. False hope is a horrible thing. Today, to believe that your military is providing your freedom is
delusional.
Yeah, it's delusional.
Yes,
and
delusional.
So, even though there's some pain of separation by making those choices, ultimately, you're freeing yourself from things that are counterproductive, false hope, and pure delusion. So I'm not sure, in fact, I'm really quite sure that even if you accepted the terms of and conditions of the covenant and you got nothing from Yahweh, the first condition is in our best interest. Knowing what I know now, I would accept the first term and condition of the covenant even if I got nothing in return other than I'm freed of delusions. That's a big deal.
Yeah, you'd probably still trumpet that. I mean, there are people out there that do, and they don't. They're not in the covenant, not anywhere.
Personally, I think this whole idea, though, of knowing the truth and knowing who God is and being engaged in a relationship with it, just to be able to get to know his nature, if that was all, that would be more than sufficient. In fact, it would still be the best offer ever made. Well, I think all.
Yeah. Well, you know, today people may dedicate their entire lives to having, you know, a law changed, as an example. And you know, when it's all said and done, what you've got's a wasted life.
That is correct.
But yet, you know, it's trumpeted out there like somebody's really done some good or really somehow advanced society in some form or another with some law that they worked on because maybe a loved one was killed by a murderer and they went and got a law passed or something like that. You know, when in fact, everything is just spiraling downwards no matter what law they pass.
Yeah, and
right?
About how many lives? I mean, there's thousands now around the world that because of our willingness to study God's word, to say, here's what he actually said, and this is where the words lead. And folks, they lead away from things that we have all at one time held dear. They lead away from government and from politics and patriotism and religion and all of these things. You know, that's the bottom line is that the truth that as Yahweh reveals it leads away from all of these things and to him. And look how many people around the world. I mean, this is an extraordinarily unpopular truth. You know, it's a one in a million kind of truth. And yet, thousands of people have responded to Yahweh by our simple, flawed attempt to be more accurate in terms of sharing what he revealed. That's, you know, that's a pretty good use of a life, wouldn't you? Don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah, it absolutely is. Sure it is. Or I wouldn't do it.
Yeah. Nothing better. I mean, if your choice was, you know, knowing who God is and what he's offering and being able to engage in a relationship with him, you know, you're going to have a lot of things that are going to be very different in terms of what you can and cannot do, should and shouldn't do. And I'll tell you, even without the five benefits of the covenant, it's still the best offer ever made. I'd take it in a heartbeat. All right, that doesn't change the fact that the Creator, Yahweh, the Father of the Covenant, is extraordinarily enriching, uplifting, giving, loving, and therefore what we get out of it is beyond even our imagination. Dode here now, speaking of the nun stanza, begins, "Your word is a lamp, a light which glistens for my feet, and a light for my path." Okay. So, it's interesting to note that what he's talking about here is Yahweh's words are the light. He didn't say that Yahweh directly was the light, although there is an equivalent here. Yahweh's word and Yahweh are one and the same. It is impossible, literally impossible. This is one of the points I didn't make very well today on Shattering Myths. I wish I had done a better job of it. We were talking about the consequence of the failed education system and that most, for at least two, maybe three generations, people have been indoctrinated so that they no longer think. They no longer exercise good judgment. And that the consequence of that is that God becomes unknowable. He doesn't just become unknown, he becomes unknowable. You were there when we were having that discussion, Larry. If you are incapable of seriously observing, carefully focusing on Yah's testimony and thinking about what it means, he's unknowable. You can't come to know him. You can't engage in a relationship with him.
Yeah, as an example, you can't take religious material. I don't think anybody. I don't think anybody's capable of taking the standard religious material that's sold out there as the undeniable word of God,
yeah,
and finding Yahweh with it. I don't believe you can.
I don't think you can either. Yeah, I don't think you can either. No, I don't think that God is knowable when you lose the capacity to study his testimony. I think that Yahweh and his word are the same. And so if you want to come to know him, if you want to see him, if you want to engage with a relationship with him, you have to engage in a relationship with his word. And so what Dode is saying here is it is Yahweh's word that is the lamp. You know, if you don't have a lamp, if you don't have a light, then you can't see the what Yahweh looks like. If you want a light that reveals what Yahweh looks like, it's His Word. Very few things are as important as this connection. Torah equals Yahweh.
Can I give an example here?
Yes.
Do you remember I shot you over an email about a guy that was going on about the last days or whatever it was, and how the Shabbat's the wrong day? And by the way, he says, I'm not a lunar Shabbat guy, but we're all, there was, this guy actually said the seventh day was never nailed down. Of course, you know, seventh day is nailed down in the plan. It's nailed down every which way, the very word Shabbat, all of it. And,
yeah, by the way, there are very few things that the whole world agrees on. I mean, very few things, because all the religion and everything.
One of them.
And through all of time, every civilization, I mean, right from the beginning, every single civilization, the Babylonians, the Assyrians, the Persians, the Greeks, the Romans, even the Roman Catholics, everybody throughout time, whether it be in Asia or it be in Africa or it be in Europe or the New World, that there's 7 days in the week. And that the
isn't that wild?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the wildest things in the world is that the whole world would agree that there are 7 days in the week. And
why didn't somebody come up with 9 days or 12?
Right, and beyond all of that, because by the way, you know, seven isn't a multiple or isn't divisible into 29.5. It's not divisible to 29. Not divisible to 30, and certainly not divisible to 29.5, and that's how many days there are in a lunar month. And so, you know, it's...
So that goes right out the window right there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so, the... I'm going to run something by you here, because maybe I'm not really getting this, but did God say that the first day of the week was the day we should keep separate?
No.
No. Did he say it was the seventh day of the week?
Yes.
Do you know that every single culture, no matter if it's Islamic or Hindu or atheist, no matter if it's in Africa or Asia, has Sunday as the first day of the week, and Saturday, they have different names for it, but it's the same connotation as the seventh day of the week, without exception. Man, there's not an exception, and you know that when Yahweh is interested in emphasizing the Shabbat, for example, when he fulfilled the first four mikrei, there's one of the first four mikrei. There's one of them that is a Shabbaton that says, "Man, this is important. You know, this is a should be celebrated as a special Shabbat." What that was Mazda, of course, and in the year 4000, year 33 CE, the important day, which was Matzah, did that fall on a natural Shabbat?
Yes, it did.
Yes, it did. Okay, there's the next important one is Sukkah is a week, is a eternal celebration of the Shabbat. The Shabbat and Sukkah are, you know, one's a weekly observance, the other one's a yearly observance, but it's the same concept. As is Yobel, by the way. The Yobel, the Shabbat, and Sukkah, all the same concept, all 777. When Yahweh returns, and he begins the celebration of year 6 to 7,000 Yah.
You mean in the year 2033? Yeah, that'll begin on a natural Shabbat.
Which
ought to blow everybody's mind.
He returns. Now, he's in a foul mood when he returns. I mean, he's really pissed off. I mean, he is really pissed off when he returns. But 5 days later, when he starts the celebration of Sukkah, which is the celebration of the Shabbat, do you know what day of the week that is?
Shabbat. It's the seventh day.
Yeah. So do you think those were all just coincidence?
I think everything is seamless in script.
Yeah, I think so.
And that's what I think, you know, at this point. But, you know, yeah. I was what I was going to say is this fellow also came up with a concept, and I want to tie this into looking at Yahweh's words and plan as opposed to mind reading with religious material, which it seems like they're right down.
Your spirit is the light. He didn't say that my personal inspiration is the lamp. He didn't say revelations that you have made personally. Now, did Dode have a pretty good communication line with Yahweh?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. So if Dode were to say, your personal revelations to me are a lamp, you and I would be in a position to say, yeah, that's pretty cool. It's obvious that Yahweh did that for Dode. He has all these wonderful prophecies. But that's Dode, of all people, who had the best relationship with Yahweh, and he's saying, what was his source of revelation, his source of illumination?
Yahweh's words.
Yeah. I want to say, if Dode says that Yah's words are his enlightenment, source of enlightenment, and he had divine, personal, prophetic revelation on a regular basis from Yahweh, that ought to tell us something.
Well, here, I've got to share this with you. This was so off the wall. The guy was actually training us in a friend of mine's room. Her name's Shannon. We're in Shannon's room, and Shannon Graham, and what the guy said was then the two prophets, and he's talking about Revelation, who I think are Enoch and Eliyah. From the time they die, it's going to be 2,000 years before Yahweh actually reveals his true Shabbat. I said, you are insane. I told the guy. I said,
why would you say
you
that?
You are delusional.
Oh,
you're
my.
Weird. You know, the problem with people is
okay,
that...
Okay, let me just ask you. May I just ask you a first question? Well, I happen to agree that it is Enoch and it is Eliyah, God mm-hmm. is Yah, that are going to be the two witnesses. On a 1 to 100 scale of it's important in terms of understanding who Yahweh is and how we can respond and participate in his covenant, knowing the identity of those two people on a 1 to 100 scale of importance, what would you rank it?
Well, I wouldn't rank it. It's not in there. It doesn't. It's
maybe
not
one.
Important.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's
you know,
there
it's like
on the...
those of us who have chosen to observe Yahweh's word and come to engage in a relationship with him. We are naturally curious. We're just naturally curious. We want to know. We seek to know. And sometimes even the details are really appealing to us. I think you're right. I think it is interesting. Is it important to know? No. Is it fascinating?
I think it would be important to know that, you know, right at that stage of the game, you're months away from Yahweh entering the world to camp out with his family, which is what Shabbat's all about, which is what the Sukkah is all about, which again is what the Yovel's all about. And he's going, you know, and for 2,000 years he's going to keep people in the dark about when the true Shabbat is. So the whole plan's been played out, and he never shared when the true Shabbat was. It is unbelievable.
Yeah, so Yahweh has this 7-day creation where he creates everything in 6 days. So the seventh day, he rests, and he has a seven-step plan to him. The seventh celebration, 7 days during the year, where the seventh we camp out together and just have a swallow time, and then he has this Shabbat observance where it's 6 days you can do whatever you want, and the seventh day spend that time enjoying the relationship with Yahweh. And then he has a Yovel that is 7 times 7 plus 1. And then you
7 lights on a menorah.
So, right, you know, yeah, 7 lights on a menorah, this. 6 plus 1. And you look at human history, and it is blatantly obvious that Adam and Chawa were kicked out of Eden just now 19 years shy of 6,000 years ago, and 3968 BCE, and that exactly 1,000 years thereafter, the Burkle impact crater caused the welling up of the water, and we had the flood. And 1,000 years thereafter, Abraham came to Mount Moriah and engaged in a dress rehearsal for Passover by affirming the covenant. And 1,000 years later, Dode brings all the materials together to build the temple on that exact same spot. And it is the cornerstone is laid in 968 BCE. And exactly 1,000 years later, Yahusha is the diminished form of Yahweh, comes and fulfills the first four mikre in year 4,000 Yah in absolute accordance to Yahweh's prophetic witness in creation of what's going to happen on the fourth day with the greater light becoming visible as a means to recognize the Moed. And 2,000 years thereafter is when he's going to come to fulfill the last two mikre, so that we can celebrate the Shabbat of years, year 6,000 to 7,000, camping out together. I mean, how do you come up with something different than that from his testimony?
This was so bizarre. It started out as I emailed you with this, with Moshe's shepherd staff, you know, eating up the serpent, mm-hmm. and the way he picked it up by the tail, see? Oh man. He thought somehow this tied into the Shabbat being hidden when it was shared very openly. It's like the people that say Yahweh's name is unknowable.
Yeah.
It's the same thing, you know. You've just destroyed the entire nature of Yahweh and everything he's about.
Yeah, if Yahweh's name is unknowable, why did he write it Yod Heh Wah Heh 7,000 times?
Amazing,
using three different vowels, the same vowels that are found in virtually every Hebrew word. Boy, if he was trying to hide it, he isn't very... You would never want to play hide and go seek with him, because he'd never figure out a way to hide. It'd be like, okay, count to 10, you open your eyes, and there he is. Thought you were going to go hide.
Well, I mean, you got two... It's just brilliant. The two great things, the Shabbat and his name, and everybody has to act like they're both secret. It's a very... Not everybody, but, I mean, people outside the covenant. And it's just a very strange...
You know, if you want to be enlightened, then turn to Yahweh's word. Your word is a lamp. Now, he goes on to say, Larry, for my feet. Now, he didn't say your word is a lamp for my eyes, but your word is a lamp for my feet and a light for my path. Now, why do you think that he spoke of feet and path?
I think that would have to do with the Moed Mikra, walking down that path there.
You betcha.
That he blazed, by the way. I don't have to blaze it, thankfully, so, you know.
Yep. There is, when you get right down to it, there is one path that it needs to be illuminated so that we can walk down it. And the doorway is Passover. The threshold is matzah. The adoption certification is Bukurim, and the enormous benefit of being enriched and enlightened is Shavua, which, by the way, is the promise of seven, is seven sevens. It is, that's the path. And that is the path that enables the benefits of the covenant. So if you want to be part of Yahweh's family, this is written, by the way, under Nun, which means seed, that your word is a lamp for my feet and a light for my path, so that we end up being perfected and immortal and adopted and enriched and empowered. That is the purpose of the Torah. The Torah guides us from our world to Yahweh's. So then we have, I have sworn an oath. Now this is Dode, first person. Dode says, I have sworn an oath to go forward, proceeding with your righteousness and your vindication, your clearly communicated prescriptions and inscribed recommendations regarding life and the relationship. In other words, how we're cut into the relationship. So once you you start down this path, and is there something that, that we really do need to do if we're going to participate in Pesach, Matzah, Bikurim, Shavua? What are Pesach, Matzah, Bikurim, and Shavua?
Well, those are the Moed Mikvah. Those are the, those are how
so
we become adopted into
meeting,
the family.
Right?
Get
right.
Yes.
You're invited to a meeting. That's what they are. They're invitations to meet with God. So this path that the Word is illuminating is the invitations to meet with God. Now, if somebody offers you an invitation, what is your obligation, if you wish to attend, what is your obligation? Isn't it to respond
well, you
and
have
say,
to go.
Yeah, count me in.
Yeah, I want to
attend. Yeah, count me in. It's the response. This is what Dode is saying. I promised, I've avowed, I've sworn an oath. I'm coming. I am going to attend the invitation. You provided the path, and I've made a promise that I'm going to accept the invitation to walk along that path. And he says, I have taken a stand. We have Kumbaya listening here. And Kumbaya is based on Kum. I've taken a stand. I've been affirmed. I've been established. I've stood up to go forward, proceeding with your righteous and vindicating means to be cut into the relationship. You know how politicians always say, we're moving forward now. And they almost always say that.
Yeah,
after,
yeah, as we go backwards. Yeah, sure, yeah.
They always say it because they've done something really heinous, and they're saying, listen, I don't want to talk about that anymore. Don't hold me accountable for that. We're moving past that. We're going forward. Okay. Well, their forward, of course, is always in the wrong direction. But the reason that Dode could go forward is he was on the path. He knew where he was going. He made a commitment to be there. And so you can just keep right on walking towards God your entire life once you get on the path. Every step you take puts you closer to him. That's what this man could do, is he could continue to proceed. And the path that we're on provides righteousness. It provides vindication. It provides acquittal. But it's also a path that is fair and open and honest regarding, and here's the chukka, which is based on choke. Choke and chukka speaks of that which is engraved, which that which is inscribed, like cut into stone. This is the, so the, you know, it's almost like you're dealing now with the Ten Statements. This is something that God has etched in stone that is designed to choke, cut us into the relationship. So here's those saying, okay, I get it. You've inscribed instructions that cut us into the relationship. Count me in. He's offering Yahweh his unwavering commitment to participate. And then he's on his feet, standing, not bowing down, standing, walking to God, using his word to illuminate that path, and recognizing that it is the thing that is getting him there is God's inscribed instructions, his prescriptions that cut us into the relationship. That's where the words take us. If you want to go where the words of Yahweh lead, you will end up in his presence. That's where they lead. And they happen to lead in a straightforward manner, a manner where you have to stand to walk along this path. You can't crawl along it, can't grovel along it, can't be on your belly along it. You can't go to and fro. You can't move to one side or another. You can't blaze your own trail.
You can't use legal wranglings to get there. I mean, it's a real direct path, isn't it?
Correct.
I mean, you...
Straightforward.
Yeah.
Seven steps.
Yeah.
Seven steps. They're all straightforward. They go directly to God. And when you are facing God and going directly to him, where's your back? Facing human institutions. You're walking away from them. All right. So he next says, I am exceedingly and eternally ready to respond and speak truthfully. Deal favorably with me, Yahweh, in accordance with your promise. The thing that made the kingdom of Dode so special that Yahweh was saying that he's going to model his thousand-year celebration of the Shabbat and Sukkah on the kingdom of Dode. And he doesn't just say it a couple of times. I mean, even in the book of Yeshayah, it's all over the place, the kingdom of Dode. Dode this, Dode that, I loved him, and we're going to celebrate, you know, 1,000 years with Dode. Is that Dode was exceedingly and eternally ready to respond and speak truthfully. Well, now, why was that? Because God gave him special decoder ring? Because God gave him the power to be a seer? No. Because God gave him nocturnal visions? No. Because he read the Word.
You know something else, too? He left religion out of it, didn't he? I mean,
yeah.
You said something pretty profound the other day. I heard it. You said, what religion was Dode? And, you know, most people, if you ask most people that, what would they say? Well, Judaism.
Yeah. No.
You said he was of no religion.
No.
And there's the right answer, of course.
He had a relationship with Yahweh because he came to see him, came to know him by reading his word. The way we all come to know him, the way we come to see him. And so now Dode is saying, I am exceedingly. Moed, ma'od here means to beyond expectations. Mode is to the greatest extent possible. And odd means forever and eternally. So to the greatest extent possible, always, ana, I am prepared to respond. I am prepared to answer. And so you could render this either one of two ways. Dode saying, yeah, I understand what you're offering. I know who you are. I understand what you're offering, and I accept. My greatest possible capacity, ad ma'ad, I am responding. I am accepting what you're offering. That's one way to look at this. The other way to look at this is I am eternally ready to answer, and I'm exceedingly prepared to answer. Now, those are different things. One is, if somebody were to ask you a question, are you prepared to answer the question based upon Yahweh's testimony? Dode was. Now, I don't think that's the primary meaning here, because of what follows. But it could be. You know, it all depends on how you define chanan. Chanan is most simply defined as mercy, as undeserved favor. So here is Dode saying, to the greatest extent possible, I'm responding. And this is my final answer for all time. So therefore, deal mercifully with me. All right? The other is, I have studied your testimony. Your word is my word. So I am totally and completely, to the greatest extent possible, prepared to answer anybody's questions about you. So please deal favorably with me. In other words, now that I'm in this position to provide the answers, let's work in an advantageous way together.
I think the difference between those two. The first rendering is probably more accurate there. I really think that.
So Dode is just saying, again, I'm responding to what you've offered through the choke, so deal mercifully with me. But don't you think there is a possibility that I'm prepared to provide answers? If people ask, and that's what he's doing right here, is providing answers.
He did it all the time.
You know, so let's work fortuitously together.
Yeah, well,
yeah, that's part of, like when we do the Shattering Myths program. Honestly, the Shattering Myths program has become laborious in many ways for me because they're constantly changing the board op, and I have no idea who's going to be one day to the next. And 3 hours is a long time, and the news has become painful and And most people are responding to events in the world by making them worse. And so is it, you know, it's not a lot of fun. But by the same token, we're in a position where we have been prepared to provide answers that the world needs, just as Doug was. And so if we are prepared to provide answers, then we want Yahweh to work with us in a fortuitous way that benefits others. I think,
yeah,
personally, I think
true.
That both, I think, you know, I was thinking about this today.
Obviously,
you know,
Doe did both. That's what we're reading
right.
here, just like you said.
Right. I think
he did
both.
He provided answers. Otherwise, we might think that Torah's law.
Correct. And I think that both are important. Yes, we initially have to come to know Yahweh and understand what he's offering by observing the Torah. And then we're in a position to simply respond to him. And then he will respond based upon what he has promised.
Well, let me
and
ask
that,
you something here.
Okay, that gets us into the covenant. But once you're in the covenant, don't you feel like you have a responsibility? And I don't mean this in a negative way. I mean in a positive way. Both an opportunity and responsibility and a desire to provide answers for others so that more people become part of his family?
Well, you know, I had two opportunities this week, and I took them both. And I mean face-to-face, okay, both. And these people seemed genuinely interested, and we'll see from there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but, yeah, I'm there ready to pounce anytime. And I shouldn't make it sound like that. I just want to share the words. Because
right.
I know, I'll tell you, one man told me, I said, look, I don't want to bore you. And he said, oh, no, I've been waiting for this for years. I want to hear this. I want to know. And I gave him all the material he's going to need to know. You know, and he seemed genuinely happy with that.
Yeah.
He was joyful about it.
And I think that...
And it made me feel... joyful.
I think that's why Dode wrote this as a song. It's a joyful thing to provide people with answers about how they can benefit from the most wonderful offer ever made. And you notice here, too, that he's saying, deal favorably with me or be merciful to me, depending on which of the two you want to look. You know, let's work favorably together, fortuitously together, and be merciful to me, Yahweh, in accordance with your promise. There's two things here that 99.9% of the world's population misses. He didn't say God. He didn't say Lord. He didn't say Allah. He didn't say Jehovah. He didn't say Hashem. His relationship was with Yahweh. He had a first name relationship with the creator of the universe. He was not uncomfortable saying his name. This is a song that was set to musical notes that was sung, which means that Dode sang out Yahweh's name. By reading and studying the Torah, he knew not only what Yahweh's name was, but how to pronounce it. He was singing this as a song. So Yahweh's name wasn't hidden to him. It wasn't something that he had too much respect to say. He belted it out in the song. And the second part is, in accordance with your promise. Now, Imrah, we began with the Dabar word, which is just the standard form of the Hebrew word for word. Imrah is a unique word for word in that its unique connotation is promise. Using words to make a promise. And so what he's saying is, don't deal favorably. He didn't say deal favorably with me because I have a really good heart. Don't deal favorably with me because I have devoted my life to charity. He didn't say deal favorably with me because I'm the dude that slayed Goliath. He didn't say any of that. He didn't say deal favorably with me because I'm the big shot on campus because I'm king. He didn't say deal favor with me because of who I am. He didn't say deal favor with me because of what I believe. Deal favor with me because of of the condition of my heart. He'll favor me because I've been engaged in charity. Now, Doad was in a position to say, deal favor with me because, you know, I've written over 100 songs that help people understand the prophetic timeline, all of human history, and your Torah. You know, he was in a position to say, you know, cut me some slack here because of all the stuff that I've done that's going to benefit humankind. He was in a position to say that. And he really was big man on campus. But he didn't. He's asking for Yahweh's mercy in accordance with Yahweh's promise. And if he has accomplished all of those things and is still
and
saying...
And he's asking for the mercy.
based upon Yahweh's promise, don't you think that maybe ought to be... You know, how would you like, Larry, to compare your resume of, you know, do you have the unpopular truth? Yeah, and, you know, and you've shared with these folks today... And how would you like to put that resume up next to Doad?
No, I don't even have any interest at all in doing
And if Doad says, you know, I want to be receive your mercy based upon your promises, then, you know, with your and my resume combined being one billionth of Doad's, if we could even be so bold, maybe it would be in our best interest to do the same thing. And I haven't ever in my life, when I was a Christian, I did. I have to tell you, when I was a Christian, I did. But since I ceased being a Christian, I have never in my life even contemplated the idea that something that I have done has somehow engendered mercy from Yahweh. Ever.
Right. And you've just hit it right on the head. That's religion, isn't it? I don't care if they're reading Paul and he says you don't have to do anything but ask for this grace and that's it. But they're all out to prove it every day, aren't they? You know, they
exactly.
go feed the old lady the soup or they do this or they do that. And they're very comfortable within all their good works. They really are.
You could hear me out on this. I could go off and say, okay, I'm devoting 6 hours a day to verbally sharing Yah's testimony. And I have provided 10 hours a day, 6 days a week for 10 years to study what Yah has to say, to translate it accurately, and to help people understand it, and have offered that freely. And there are thousands of people around the world who've come to know Yah because of just caring enough about Yahweh's word to share it. And I could say, you know, God, that's making a pretty good impact. You may want to, you know, cut me some slack here. I probably deserve, you know, a plum. And I want to say, just providing that hypothetical, my skin crawls. It makes my skin crawl. It's like when somebody says, I want to thank you for all the work you've done. You know, you've given us this wonderful gift. And I said, oh, my God, don't thank me. I mean, once you come to know who Yahweh is and what he's offering, this notion that somehow what you have done merits some kind of favor with God becomes a repulsive notion. I mean, it's not only uncomfortable. Like, as I was giving the hypothetical for the purpose of illustrating this, my skin was actually crawling. I was unable to share the hypothetical without being repulsed by it. Now, that's the opposite of religion, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. They'll stand up and accept kudos and adulation from everybody. The plaudits of the people keep them coming back and spreading really more lies week after week. I mean, they love it.
The promise of immortality, the promise of perfection, the promise of adoption, the promise of enlightenment, the promise of enrichment. Who made those promises?
Yahweh made those promises. Okay. And
who described the means to avail yourself of those promises? Whose testimony provides that instruction?
That'd be Yahweh.
Yeah. Who created the universe in the first place and the capacity for all of these things even to be realistic?
I think you did that in one of your 10-hour studies.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
pretty sure. Yada did it.
Yeah, so since, and by the way, and then when you're dealing with the way, so that God can remain just and do all of these wonderful benefits for us, who paid the price?
I think that was him.
Yeah, I think that was him.
Where do we fit in? Hopefully
on
that path.
We want to take some credit for this.
No.
You know, I know Paul says that he finished the sacrifice because Yosha wasn't capable of doing everything that was required, so he had to step in. Now, by saying all that, I don't want to diminish for one nanosecond the contribution that we make when we study and share Yahweh's Word. When we do what Dode is doing, where we become prepared and then share Yahweh's Word, we are, in fact, making a huge contribution, not only to others knowing, but also to the joy of our Father.
You know, if one relationship comes out of me knowing what I know, okay, and knowing what I know about Yahweh's words and taking Yahweh's
right.
words and sharing them with somebody, and they pick up the ball and run with them, and
right.
there's an eternal relationship. Now, I mean, put yourself in Yahweh's position. All
right.
these relationships are eternal.
Right.
I mean, that's a long time.
It is.
You know, we think of people being married for 60 years being,
right.
wow. Now you're talking eternal relationships. That means that Yahweh would, and he pretty much proved it, would crawl through glass to know that person.
Absolutely. And you don't think that it makes God, it pleases him when we come to understand his word, when we respond to his word, and then when we enthusiastically share his word, and somebody else says, wow, I appreciate that. That makes sense to me. I want to know more. I want to engage in a relationship with Yahweh too. It just because we say that what we do doesn't garner favor in terms of our salvation with God, and that to
oh, I love
take
that,
any credit
that,
for it,
because what I do on both sides
sense.
Doesn't.
But
it doesn't take away
it,
either.
But
just
still,
the
there's this huge enthusiasm for the benefit of sharing. And it's, and by the way, it's not just for Yahweh, it's not just for the person, it's also for us. In fact, I asked this question when we began the show. Would you choose to accept the five conditions of the covenant if the only benefits were knowing Yahweh in this temporal life and having an accurate perspective, understanding the universe? Would you... you know, would you do it? And it gets right back down to, all right, would you take the time to study Yahweh's words and to try to understand their full implications and the connections that we can draw from them if you are the only one to benefit? I think the answer there is absolutely. In fact, the person that comes to know them and well enough to share them is the greatest beneficiary.
Have you ever met people in business, that it wouldn't hurt them one bit to help somebody else in that business, and yet they wouldn't help them a bit because there was nothing in it for them?
That's correct.
I've met plenty of people like that.
Yeah.
I don't understand it.
No.
You know, it's not like success is a zero-sum game out there. Some guy's successful, so you cannot be. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, and in this case, where, okay, what happens with the amount of knowledge? And we have a lot of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And more than that, as you point out, and I get what you're saying, we have a lot of understanding. And so
right.
what happens... especially in social media, and you know it, just being on the radio sharing it, if you're out there and you're sharing Yahweh's words and you're sharing the truth at the base of those root words, what they really mean, and you're really sharing them with people, there's a lot of people that want to get into what we call a pissing contest.
Right.
Where I know as much as you do.
Okay, good.
And they've
good.
Got the
I,
whole
I hope
thing.
You do. I hope you do. In fact, I hope you know more. You know, I hope.
Well,
I
sadly,
hope you know
they
more.
Don't.
But
they need
but
to listen to Yahweh's words.
Better thing. In fact, I was as I was reading through this material before the program today, and I read something that I wrote when I originally wrote this chapter, and I just want to share it because it struck me as fairly profound. And I just wrote, it's obvious and yet not instinctive to recognize the fact that since God revealed his Torah through a man, he appreciates it when other men and women share it freely. Yahweh chose to reveal his Torah through Moshe. He chose to reveal how to observe his Torah through Dod. Now, Yahweh was fully capable of establishing a printing company. He could have printed copies of his Torah so that they were available, you know, on every street corner. He probably could have put it in digital media and have MP3 players for all of us. Yeah, he
sure.
could have it inside of us playing like this Morse code is in the background of the show tonight. He could have had it beaming into us that way. Now, the fact that the creator of the universe, the most powerful entity in all of the universe, the author of DNA and of molecules and atoms and stars and light
Quarks.
And matter, chose to reveal his words through men and women. Doesn't that tell you that he's trying to establish a pattern here? Like, okay, since he revealed the Torah through Moshe, since he revealed how to observe the Torah through Dod, since he revealed the history of humankind, past, present, and future, through guys like Yashayah and Yirmiyah, don't you think maybe he's trying to set a pattern here? You know, pay attention. Why don't you do the same thing? Why don't you then convey what I have revealed through them to others so that more people come to know what I have said?
I think there's that pattern, and I think there's also another pattern. And that's like, let's say you were looking for people to put on your team, people you really wanted to know.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this large group of people, and they kept going by this house where that was on fire.
Right.
And these kids were screaming. I mean, that's where we're at today, kids. I mean, that's it. That's where we're at.
Yeah.
And these kids were screaming for help.
Right.
And thousands of people just walking by. And, you know, just paying no mind, eating their sandwich or talking or
right.
on their with a cell phone growing out of their head, whatever it is.
Right. Uh-huh.
And this person runs in there and they get those kids and save them. You know, who do you want to know?
Right. Exactly.
Got something
you
to
know,
do with it.
What's really interesting, Larry, as I was reading Yashayah, how many times Yahweh said that he wanted to be able to reach out to his children, to warn them that they were headed in the wrong direction, that they were trusting in religion and politics, and that those things were harmful to them. And he wanted to reach out through someone to point them back to him. And you know what he said? I couldn't find anybody. And what's interesting...
That's amazing.
...is that God said, not only couldn't I find anybody, I really wanted to find someone that I could work with to share my testimony, but that when God couldn't find anybody because there was nobody willing to work with him, he took a step back. He was not willing to do it as bold light in the sky and this booming voice and saying, don't do that anymore. Come to me. There's two profound thoughts here. One is, in a world of hundreds of millions of people, he couldn't find anybody that he could work with.
That's amazing.
I mean, when you think about how flawed we are, you know, and yet Yahweh is still willing to work with us, he couldn't find anybody. And also, when he couldn't find anybody, rather than just doing it himself, he didn't. He said, all right, well, I have to wait until there is somebody. He created the universe
wow.
for the purpose of having relationships, and he's unwilling to work in this world apart from those relationships.
You know, that is a profound thought. That's a very profound thought. He couldn't find anybody in a world of millions.
Right. But that's only half the profound thought. That was the first thought that got me. It's so sad. I mean, I wanted to cry. I mean, it was just, I read this and I read it over and over and over again, and I just, it made me want to cry because it's lonely sharing how rotten government and religion and these kinds of things and militarism are today. It's lonely. It's depressing sharing what that is, and so few people are interested in what Yah was offering, his testimony. It's so unpopular that, you know, sometimes I get to, oh, my goodness, you know, wow, is there really anybody listening? And you think of, when you read that in Yahshayah, and Yah said, I couldn't find anybody. You know, after telling all his people through the prophet, you know, change, you're going in the wrong direction, you're doing great harm to yourself, you're going to die. And instead, why don't you walk to me? And then after pleading with them over and over for this, he says, yeah, and I wanted to find someone that I could convey this through, and I couldn't find anyone. No one to work with. And that's half of it. The other half is that when God was unable to find anybody to work with, what did we have? We had a period of 400 years where God didn't say boo. Not a single prophet.
Wow.
You know, from Malachi and Zechariah to Yahusha, we have radio silence. Not a peep from God. He said he couldn't find anybody, and so he didn't say a thing. And then what's interesting is God finally says, and you have to read it through the words. He's finally saying, all right, then what I'm going to do is I'll do it myself. I will do it myself, but I'm not going to do it myself as the fire on top of the mountain. I'm going to do it myself as going to come down and convey it as if I were one of you. Since I can't find anybody to convey it with, I'll take on human form. And I'll do it. But I'll do it in human form. Because I'm not here to impress you. That's not my shtick. If you want to be impressed, if you want to be wowed, then I don't want to know you. Because in eternity, that's the last thing God wants, is somebody that's wowed by him, somebody that's impressed by him. He wants people who are comfortable enough with him just to enjoy being with him. And so he did it through Yahusha. And then I think we went a long time before we reached the time where Yahweh says, you know, the only way for reconciliation to occur in a world that is falling apart is there have to be voices that I can work with again. And here we are.
I wonder what the people were so afraid of. Because, I mean, these are people of fear, obviously. I mean, what do you think they were afraid of? Walking away from what they had? Speaking the truth?
You know what I think? We're speculating here as to why there was no one, is that I think most people just got preoccupied with their lives. They were willfully ignorant. They didn't even bother to read the Torah. And if you don't read the Torah, if you aren't seriously considering, if you aren't doing what Dode's doing, seriously considering the words of the Torah and embracing the words of the Torah and focusing on what's important in God's direction, then you're not prepared to work with him. Now, it's true that Yahweh can start with somebody who isn't there. Moshe was not there. Abraham was not there. Neither of them were studying the Torah. And if the person's attitude is right, if they're willing to go where the words lead and where Yahweh leads, then he can take them to the Torah. But I think he's saying, in fact, I know he's saying, is there not only wasn't anybody reading the Torah that had come to know him that he could work with, there wasn't anybody that he could even lead to the Torah.
Well, I sure hope I at least make that bill. Wow. I don't know. You know, sometimes, I mean, I feel woefully inadequate. I'm sure everybody does from time to time.
Oh, I do. I was asked the other day, I got an email from somebody who was having trouble with the archives and said the archives were repetitive, they weren't playing different shows. And so I wanted to check to see if, in fact, the archives were all different and whether or not GCN was posting them correctly. So I listened to about 5 minutes out of a week of shows, and I was horrified. I was just horrified. I was so embarrassed. I am so unprofessional, so unqualified to be doing this. My diction is so poor. But I was just horrified. I was totally and completely
I don't catch that, by the way.
Well, that was my impression of listening to it, was that I am unprofessional, I am unqualified, my diction's not good, my tone is not a pro- and that I am not a professional radio host. I was really, really disappointed. It was, I mean, all I could do just to keep from breaking down and being wholly embarrassed by it. And so I actually wrote a letter to someone who listens to the show every day, who I thought would give me an honest appraisal of, am I really this bad? Am I really embarrassing us because I'm as bad as I think I am in this whole thing? But the reason I'm saying that is that not only do I genuinely think I'm awful at it, and I really do, I have a hunch that deep down, that's kind of what Yahweh wants, is to work with a flawed implement. There has to be a reason that Yahweh chose a guy that had more faults than hair to say, this is the way you observe the Torah. Not by trying to obey every rule, by coming to understand it, and he chose a guy that has more faults than hair. And he took a guy that whose diction was probably as bad or worse than mine, and he says, this is the guy that I'm going to introduce my name and my nature to. This is the guy that I'm going to provide my guidance to, and he's a stutterer. And then he took a guy that, I'm going to tell you, Abraham is not the sharpest tool in the shed. And he says, this is the guy that I'm going to enlighten with the benefits that you can inherit from my covenant, and I'm going to work with a guy that ain't all that smart, so that if he can get it, and I can share the terms and conditions and the benefits and the process with a guy that's not very smart, then anybody that I have that's part of creation can figure this out. So when you said, you know, you felt pretty inadequate from times, well, man, I want to tell you, I really do. I feel horribly inadequate. And I,
well, your insights are better than mine. How do you think I feel? I mean, come on.
Well,
really?
You know,
sometimes I think I put too much into my work, and I just don't know.
Yeah. Okay. So we're feeling inadequate. If I were to tell you, Larry, what I think is that there's a half a dozen things that Yahweh has to have, because this goes back to Yashayah. I can't find anybody that can work with me. I think there are some baseline requirements for those that Yahweh can work with. And I think one of the baseline requirements is personal inadequacy, where you never think, just like we say, you know, don't recognize that he's not going to be saved because of his accomplishments, and he's got a pretty damn good resume, is that you have to have this sense of relative inadequacy so that you rely on Yahweh and his words, not your own capability. I think that is a baseline requirement. Otherwise, working directly with the Creator God of the universe and receiving these insights, they would drive an ego that would make it impossible for the person to be effective in that relationship. So I think if you see ego as opposed to a sense of inadequacy, you know for certain that person is not working with God. Because I don't think God will tolerate it. I don't think God will tolerate ego and pride in accomplishment in his presence. And so a baseline requirement, if you're going to be with God, is, and I'm not talking about feigning humility or inadequacy. You genuinely have to feel that you're inadequate. And if you don't think you're inadequate, chances are you're not qualified to work with Yah. So that's one of them. I think the other is, are you willing to go where the words lead? If the words take you in a direction that takes something away that you've clung to in your life, are you willing to go where the words lead? You know, Moshe, ultimately, are you willing to go where the words lead? I'm going to take you right back to the place where you're wanted for murder. Are you willing to go where the words lead? And I think that's the second.
With Yahweh at my side, I'm willing to go anywhere. That'll be fine with me. I find it strange that he couldn't. I don't know. I would think most people would jump at the chance.
Okay, there's a third. I'm just summarizing here. So if somebody has one and takes exception with this, feel free. You're not going to hurt my feelings. I'm sharing what I think are the baseline requirements to work in a meaningful way with Yahweh. So the first is inadequacy.
Understanding the Torah, no ego, would be very big.
So
insight.
No ego,
that's a big
understanding
insight.
That you need to be reliant on Yahweh because you're not personally qualified. And second is, are you really willing to go where the words lead? And that disqualifies 99.9% of people who are not willing to go where the words lead. Are you willing to admit, to say, I was wrong? And that I was going in the wrong direction, forming the wrong relationships. My understanding was wrong. Here's where the words lead. So are you willing to do that?
Well, they killed most of the prophets.
Right.
They killed most of the prophets. Today, you and I are in a situation where we're able to say pretty much what we want to say. You know.
Yeah.
Being recorded.
We're publicly humiliated
and for listening,
it.
Be damned, you know.
Yeah.
And be publicly humiliated, whatever. But, you know, they did stone most of the prophets. They killed them.
Absolutely. But this whole idea of are you willing to go where the words lead is the thing that precludes most people from engaging with God. They won't go where the words lead because where the words lead puts you in a very unpopular position. Now, I'm going to say there's a third thing, Larry. Are you willing to go where the words lead? Do you realize that you're unqualified on your own, that you have to be dependent to make this this relationship work? I think there's a third thing.
I'd rather be dependent. I'd rather be dependent.
The third thing is something that I think you have in spades. That is passion. Passion. I mean, passion to the point of Abraham, when he doesn't get it, says, hey, God, man, I just don't get it. When Abraham thought that God said something that just wasn't possible, he just started laughing. I mean, he was a passionate individual. I don't think there's anybody that's ever been more passionate for the things of Yahweh than Dode. I think he was the most passionate. I think God really despises people that, are half in. You know, I'm going to hang on over here too. What Yahweh wants is, all right, I'm offering you the lifeline. Are you willing to jump out and grab this lifeline and cling to it, and let go of everything else? Are you willing to do it? Do you trust me to that extent? And is this relationship more important to you than anything else? And passion, enthusiasm. Well, what is it that makes a family work? God, if you had
loyalty.
Can you imagine having a family where nobody expressed any emotion, any enthusiasm, any passion for the family?
I grew up in one. I do. They're like robots. It's a weird thing, you know.
Yeah, but passion is an important thing. You look at Yosha. So this is, the human manifestation of Yahweh. And he was calling people morons. He was saying, you're an idiot. He was saying, you're nothing but serpents. You're unclean. You've got no clue. You know, why are you asking me that question? Are you stupid or something? in your face, bold. Passionate. Yet if somebody asked him a question of, all right, I genuinely want to know, Now, he might play with him a little bit. Like even Nicodemus coming to him private and say, okay, I get it. I know who you are. But I don't think I really understand the process. And even before Yosha would say, you know, here it is, 1, 2, 3, this is what you understand. He says, how is it possible, Nicodemus, that you, as a teacher of the Torah,
yeah, don't get the process.
Yeah, haven't figured this out. Why are you asking me? He said to Nicodemus, you're a teacher of the Torah, and you haven't figured this out? And what he really caused Nicodemus to realize is that, no, he wasn't a teacher of the Torah. He was a teacher of the Talmud.
Yeah,
and as a teacher
I think
of the Torah, if he really was a teacher of the Torah, he would know the answer. But
I think it goes right back to what you were saying. If you want to talk about the people with the greatest advantage to getting on that path and coming to know Yahweh, it's today. It's today.
Yeah.
It's all out there.
Passion, humility, not in a sense of, it's too scared, I don't want to go out and do that, I don't want to take the risk. No, not that kind of humility. Humility in the sense of, all right, my intelligence and my knowledge compared to, for example, Dodes, compared to Yahweh's, compared to Yosha's, is so infinitesimal, and I'm so prone to error, that that for me to go out there and do this, I have to have help. All right, we're going to work as a team, and you're going to provide the inspiration. I'll provide, you know, I'm going to focus on the words. I'm going to do it just what Doe did. I'm going to focus on the word. But this project needs to be one of teacher student and reliance on that basis. So all of this is what Doe is communicating to us. He had that role with Yahweh. He was a perpetual learner with Yahweh. In fact, he goes on and says here, enjoy and accept the free will offering of my mouth, Yahweh. I want you to teach me your prescriptions and inscribed recommendations for living that cut me into the relationship. He is a perpetual learner. And Dode is recognizing that there is really something we can give to Yahweh that trips his trigger, that makes him happy. Enjoy and accept my free will offering of my mouth. Don't say, based upon freedom of choice, I am choosing to not only respond to you, but to have your words be my words. And so my offer to you, Yah, is that I'm going to share your word. I'm going to respond to your offer. And he's saying that Yahweh is not only going to accept that, he's going to enjoy that. That's what he wants to do. He wants to work through us, to work with us, to teach us so that we can teach others. And Dode is not just saying, okay, that's what I'm going to do, that's what I am doing, Yahweh. Smile, enjoy it, accept it. This is what I'm committed to doing. But in the same breath, he says, okay, teach me about your inscribed instructions that cut us into the relationship, your chukah. Because the only way that Yahweh is going to enjoy what we're saying is if we've taken the time to understand what it is that he is offering us.
I've always said, how does anybody respond to the choke? If they don't even know what the offer is, and that's the big problem. It's the biggest problem of all.
You know, you've got the pastor, you've got the priest who wants you to dig deep and make your tithe and your offering, and you know that's going to be the blessing. What does Dode say? The thing that's going to please Yahweh, the thing that Yahweh is going to accept, not his money, his words. But what words? Words that are based upon what he learned when he read the Torah. He goes on to say here, the perpetuity, the continuance of my soul is in my hands. So I will not overlook nor forget your Torah. Now, Is Dode taking responsibility for his salvation here when he says, my soul is in the fate of it's in my hands?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. You know why? Because the fate of your soul, Larry, the fate of my soul, the fate of everyone who's listening to this program, we have absolute control over the fate of our souls. And that's the thing we ought to care the most about. If we trust our souls to Yahweh, if based upon never overlooking, never forgetting, never ignoring his Torah, and we come to know how Yahweh can take care of our soul, if we follow the advice that he provides in his Torah, then we in fact are assuring the eternal existence of our soul. We make that choice. You know, if God were to say that he were responsible for every soul, then God would be playing a game. You know, it's a crapshoot. Okay, this one I'm going to keep, that one I'm not going to keep. The moment the fate of our souls is in God's hand, and he's the one that makes the choice, then the entire experience of being here on earth and having this mortal existence is a fraud. God can't be the determiner of the fate of souls. We have to be. We have to choose whether or not we are going to observe the Torah, respond to the Torah, act upon what God has shared with us that will include us into his family. And when we make that decision, Dode's saying, I'm freely making this declaration. I'm responding. When we make that declaration, when we choose of our own free will to participate in his covenant as he has laid out the terms and conditions of it, then we are taking responsibility for our soul.
And that's clearly one of the things. That is clearly one of the things that Yahweh says has to happen. It has to be done of our own volition.
Right.
You know, there's no relationship that I know of, you know, that's going to go very far if it's a shotgun wedding. You know, I mean,
right.
It just isn't.
God is not choosing which souls live into perpetuity with him. We choose. He gave us.
Yeah, if you look at what the great religions have done, if you take Christianity or take Islam, even today, they're running around. They conquer areas and they force them into a religion. Don't they? I mean, the Catholic Church did it to control the world for, you know, two centuries.
Right.
And so.
It's compulsion. You know, Islam. What are they doing now in Mosul? You'll either convert to Islam
or die.
And ally yourself with Satan, or be wholly and completely humiliated, or we're going to kill you. I mean, those are the three choices. And this is the opposite of that. Dode's not saying that my soul is going to be perfect forever because I've done everything you said. I've been perfect. You laid down the law, and I was obedient. Therefore, my soul is going to live forever. No. Are you listening? He focused on Yahweh's word. That was the light that illuminated the path to Yahweh. He responded. He accepted the instructions that Yahweh chiseled in stone that directs us to him, cuts us into
the covenant. He embraced it.
He fell in love with the Torah. He never overlooked the Torah. He never, ever forgot about Yahweh's guidance, and therefore his soul is going to live forever. That's the purpose of the Torah guidance. And he's saying, this is the last thing. Continue to teach me. What does Torah mean? Teaching. And so Yahweh is providing an invitation in his Torah for us to be part of his covenant family and the means for us to walk from our flawed and imperfect temporal world to his forever perfect realm as his children, and it is an invitation. And Dode is saying, of my own free will, I am unequivocally, undeniably, and forever, final answer, saying yes. And because I've based my response on Yahweh's Torah promises, I'm going to live forever. It's not bragging. Statement of understanding and fact. Now, this is a really interesting statement that comes next. Those guilty of violating the standard have placed a snare for me. And so, as for me, I will not wander from your precepts, those instructions which you have entrusted to us so that we can respond to you. And so, here, the religious, the political, they are deliberately setting a trap. And it's not just a trap for their victims, but they're trying to trap those who are willing to share the truth. And so he says, they've placed a trap. It's a snare before me. So it's important, if they place that snare, the one place they can't place the snare is on the way. And so he says, you know, if I just stay steadfast and I walk down the path that you have provided, I don't wander from your instructions, I am never going to be ensnared by that. So Dode is even taking responsibility for not being entrapped or led astray. You know how many Christians they pray, oh God, don't let me fall victim to temptation and rubbish. Well, you want to keep from being led astray? Read the Torah.
They all seem to be preoccupied with sex.
That's
what kills me about it.
Yeah, I know. Do you think
I mean,
God
this is the whole preoccupation?
You
worship Satan on Sunday in front of this pagan cross, and
they're just so I don't want to be involved in sexual promiscuity. Yeah, how much did Yahweh have to say about sexual promiscuity in the Torah?
Not much.
No. Now, he had some things to say about sexual perversion. Promiscuity, no. But sexual perversion. He says, no, I don't want you doing it with the lambsies and the camels and the sheep and the, you know. Don't do it with animals. He's saying, I don't want you to do it with your mother. If you're a guy, I don't want you doing it with another guy. If you're a girl, I don't want you doing it with another girl. And if I don't want you doing it with your daughters, and I don't want you to do it with your mother. So he was, you know, don't do it with children. He was into telling us don't be perverted sexually. But in terms of enjoying sex, that's not good. That's a man-made problem. It's not a God problem.
Obviously, you know, that is the case. I'm just saying that seems to be the big preoccupation. I mean, beyond all things, you know, and you sit and you wonder, what are these people thinking? You know, maybe they need to get their mind out of the gutter for a while. I mean, if that's your preoccupation, there's something weird going on there. That's just my opinion. But
yeah, I think, for example, the evangelical Christian fixation on homosexuality. Yeah, God said, I've got 50 things here that I think are perverted sexually, and because love and a marriage relationship and conceiving and raising children is a part of the metaphor for my covenant, I want you to understand what I think is appropriate and what is not appropriate, and I'm going to list the things that aren't appropriate. And homosexuality is one of about 50 things on the list, and 50 may be an exaggeration, mm-hmm. There's 25 things on the list. And yet you listen to evangelical Christians, and it's like that's the only thing on the list. And what's worse about it is the founder of evangelical Christianity, Paul, was a homosexual. So you just say, you know, did Yahweh write, when he put together the Ten Statements in stone, did he write about sexual promiscuity? Thou shalt not be sexually active.
No, I don't.
No, did he? Did he write?
No, I don't.
Thou shalt not
anywhere,
be
anywhere.
A homosexual.
No, I don't see any of it in there.
Thou shalt not be bisexual. Thou shalt not be transgender. Did he?
I think at some point common sense comes
into
the picture.
I don't recall those being among the ten. The only one that can be remotely equated to sexuality that's among the ten is don't make a practice of adultery. And it's in the ten, but it's not in the ten because of sexual promiscuity. It's in the ten.
Yeah, it's there because he doesn't want us going out and romancing other gods, is what that
correct.
Is. I mean, I know.
Correct, because
I know
all every time that Yahweh mentions adultery in the context of Yisrael, it's in the context of them chasing after false gods.
Yeah.
Exactly. Now, so what part of Jesus Christ and Lord's and Allah's, you know, don't these people get? You know, when you've got a God that you don't know his name and you model him after Dionysus, maybe you're guilty of the very instruction that you don't want to pay any attention to so you can fixate on homosexuality. I don't get it.
I don't get it either.
Yeah,
I really don't get it because you can show it to them side by side. You know, you can take verses from the Qumran scrolls and put them side by side with what's in a book named after the sun goddess Biblio.
Yeah.
And you can put it side by side and say, look, this is extant material. Here's the words used.
Right.
And take a look at what's in your
what these words mean. And by the way, check these words. I mean, there's lots of online free encyclopedias. Go check the meanings for the words for yourself.
Well, they reject them. I'm telling you right now, they just reject it.
Yeah. Much rather go and condemn homosexuals. You know, Tony Dungy got himself all in the twit by saying that he wouldn't have drafted Michael Sams. And ultimately says it's because his religious beliefs causes him not to accept that lifestyle. And, I'm going to tell you, if that's a litmus test for you, you've missed it all. And, God does not like homosexuality. I get it. And but I will tell you, on a 1 to 100 scale of things that upset God, homosexuality is a 1.
Well, I mean, you know, but you've got to keep that whole, you know, the whole Babylonian thing in there, which is religion tied with politics, tied, you know, it's all got to be tied in.
Yeah, that's what you're talking to walk away from.
Right, but you have to have the abortion debate, you know. You know what I'm saying? The whole Christian right thing, which are all things that are, in the scheme of things, you know, meaningless, practically.
Yeah. I'm saddened that we choose abortion over adoption. I'm saddened
that
man has chosen to eradicate life rather than to adopt life and follow Yahweh's plan. But is there anything you and I are going to do to stop the freedom women now have to get a legal abortion?
No, and they've gone beyond that. They've gone to these places where they're full-term murder abortions. I mean, it's
insane. Oh, of course, yeah, full-term. Yeah, I know.
You know,
third trimester where they're murdered. And so, can you speak out against that and say that's a really bad thing to do?
Yeah, I do say that, but I'm not going to dedicate my life to it.
But, you know, in terms of things that are murderous, promoting Pauline Christianity is infinitely more murderous than is the propensity of women to do third trimester abortions.
Oh, absolutely. That's the absolute truth of it. And if you lay it out to them in that way, I mean, you just be prepared to get stoned or sent to hell or whatever. Yeah.
Oh, you always quote the line, well, he without sin cast the first stone.
The one they made up, you mean?
Yeah, the one they made up. Well, since they made it
you
up,
know what I do? I step right up to the plate, and then they tell me, you're judgmental, and I say, you bet on it. I'm as judgmental as it gets.
You bet on it. I'm fully aware of the meaning of the Hebrew word mishpat. And mishpat in Hebrew means to be judgmental. Yeah, I understand. God must tell us to be judgmental 500 times. Yeah, so I am judgmental. In fact, he not only tells us to be judgmental about 500 times with mishpat, he actually gave us the capacity with the Nesama. So he gave us the capacity to be judgmental with our Nesama, and then he gave us the information we could use to exercise good judgment, and then he constantly says, I exercise good judgment, I would encourage you to do the same. You betcha.
Yeah, but if you're to pick up the religious material, it says, don't be judgmental. Don't exercise
yeah, it says, judge
judgment.
Not unless you be judged.
It is insane.
Yeah. And
it's
actually,
insane
they, did, wait a minute. So you're telling me that he spoke English. Judge not, lest you be judged. So that's your testimony. He spoke those words in English. Well, no. Okay, well, they're translated from what then? Greek. Oh, Greek, great, great. So you're telling me he spoke Greek, and he used krino, which means to separate, you know. Don't separate, lest you be separated. Is that what he did? Did he really speak Greek? No, he didn't speak Greek. He spoke Hebrew. Oh, so what did he say, you think, in Hebrew? Don't separate. So many wonderful
things. So you'll find yourself separated.
Right.
And it's,
in fact,
it's,
one
it's
of the great,
wild.
In fact, the most likely the Hebrew word that he used would be loazab. Don't forsake. Don't damn. Don't cause people to be estranged. Loazab. Or azab. And that would be
well,
the Hebrew equivalent.
I mean, the Hebrew word azab is to separate,
to be forsaken.
I am guessing it was in the cleric's benefit for people not to be very judgmental or thoughtful. And I'm sure it's why it was rendered, judge not, lest you be
yeah.
judged.
Oh, of course, yeah. And yet the most likely Hebrew translation... the Hebrew basis for the statement, which is krino, which means to separate. And so in Greek, it would be don't separate or you will be separated. Then you have to say, okay, he didn't speak Greek. So if they're translating what he said in Hebrew in Greek, what is the word in Hebrew that is most consistent, most important, most used regarding separation, and it's
azab. Yeah,
and so he would have used, you know, lo azab. Do not separate, do not forsake, do not estrange, or you're going to be estranged.
By the way, I gotta congratulate you. I'm gonna throw you a couple of kudos on your sense of humor when you were talking about ecclesia. Being changed, to Kukurius or Kukuros?
The moon goddess.
The one that binds and lords over you and so forth. Why would one person take a Greek word and translate another Greek word, especially when it has nothing to do with that word. It's as curious as changing Torah to tadpole.
Yeah.
That was beautiful. It was beautiful. Yeah. It says it all. That's what they're reading.
It's only the word.
You know.
You're claiming that these are the words of God and that you have no respect for what he actually said. You just free change whatever you want to change it to. Just go ahead and change it.
Yeah, let's make Torah tadpole. It would make sense.
In fact, making Torah tadpole would be less offensive than changing Mikra, which Yosha. I mean, can you imagine what Yosha had to personally endure?
Whoa!
And this is Yahweh.
Yeah, no.
To to make the promises of the Mikra possible, and you think that you have the opportunity to change then Mikra, which is what he said, translated ecclesia
to a religious institution,
to a religious
which he railed against.
Sun goddess church, and that's better than and creating this institution of a church and associating with God versus let's just call Torah tadpole. Now I'm not going to call Torah tadpole, but
they call Torah law, which is pretty offensive
in
my book, but.
And you call this the inerrant word of God, and that's what you do. Okay.
Unbelievable.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, well, once you show people this and they actually turn their head from it, there's nothing else ever to be said to them again. I mean, they're just hopeless.
Yeah.
They're mired in religion.
But you know, you and I were part of a church. And to go where the word leads, when you realize that ecclesia is a translation of what he actually said in Hebrew, and the closest Hebrew word to ecclesia is mikra. And then you realize, oh my goodness, what he's doing is establishing his mikra, and you recognize that the mikra is the answer to everything. Then at that point, if you're not willing to go where the words lead, there is no hope for your soul. If you're willing,
and then accidentally, a Pesach dinner becomes a Lord's Supper, and then when he's fulfilling the three Moed Mikra right in a row, he's dead in a tomb by accident. He's not really in the heart of the land. On and on. I mean, he's
on
purposeful.
And on. Yeah,
anything to get you
How
off the path.
How many times do you have to be lied to, Christian, before you're going to give up on Christianity? Lied to about Jesus. Lied to about Christ. Lied to about God dying. Lied to about a bodily resurrection. Lied to about a Trinity. Lied to about a church. Lied to about a New Testament. Lied to about Paul. How many times do you have to be lied to? And obviously lies. I mean, absolute lies that there is absolutely no way to justify. Sunday.
Oh, they're blatant. They're
right.
Blatant.
Christmas and Easter for the Mikra. How many times do you have to be lied to by your religion before you're going to start not trusting your religion, or you're just going to allow your religion to lie to you about everything, and you just don't care, you're going to believe them anyway? And if that's the case, what have you done to your soul? How did Doe
you
take responsibility
it.
For his soul?
We're right back to Doe. I've got my soul in my own hands here.
Right, because what? Because I'm reading the Torah. That's how come I have my soul in my hands. I'm reading the Torah. I am focused on the Torah. Your words, they're a light. They show me the way. Yeah.
What do you think? This is what I think. I think the thing that enrages Yahweh the most is people bringing religious precepts and concepts and attaching them to him. I think I think that is the ultimate.
That's the,
right
third, that's the third statement that he etched in stone. Unforgivable.
Yeah, but it's just two.
So he only lists one unforgivable sin. There's only one unforgivable sin, and that's that one.
Yeah.
Sharing lifeless deception in his name.
Yeah, and or his reputation.
Well, you know, the Pope.
Let's face it, they don't use his name.
Philadelphia. I mean, I'll do a series of shows. We'll all say that, you know, he's nothing but worm rot. That I will personally attend his trial, and I can assure you that man is hell bent. He is absolutely revolting, and for any Roman Catholic that's going to go and be all a Twitter that this holy man is coming, you're as lost and as disgusting as he is. You know, you're right. The institution on earth today that God hates the most isn't Islam. He hates Islam, to be sure, but it's not Islam. It's Christianity. Well, I shouldn't say that.
I'll be honest with you, I think that's what trapped the majority of Israel.
The case. He may hate Judaism more than Christianity.
Maybe.
Because
he sure
Judaism.
Spends a lot of time talking about it.
Yeah, I think he may. I think I spoke out of the text here. I think that that he hates Judaism.
But he says
Satan's
seat of power is the Christian church.
That is correct. It's the beast. Yep. So it's a 1-2. I don't know if it makes any difference to say, you know, when you have something eminently despised by Yahweh, as an abomination, does it matter if you're the greatest abomination or the secondary or the third, the tertiary abomination?
No, it doesn't matter.
Does it really matter?
Six of one, a half dozen of another. It really doesn't matter.
You know,
That people.
Once you're part of Yahweh's family, does it matter if you're a Larry or a Craig? Does it really matter?
No, it probably doesn't.
No, it doesn't matter. You know, there's...
No, because Craig, we'll both be perfect. That'll be
lovely. We're both going to be perfect. Now, I still think that Doe's going to be smarter than we are, but that's okay. You know, I hope that there's people in the eternity that are smarter than me. I want to learn from them, right?
Yeah, sure. If you could never learn anything, eternity would be a drag.
Oh,
I mean, really? I mean, you know, you have to be able to learn. You know, you have to be able to move forward. Everything's forward moving.
Yeah, correct.
I mean, it's all forward.
Yeah. I am looking forward to the exploring of this existing universe, both inside and out, at the molecular level and also at the galactic level.
You know how much you're talking about there? Wow.
Yeah.
You know, you start getting into at the molecular level. You know, I guess there's probably a way for us to get there, too.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, there's a lot of houses in that mansion.
I personally think the exploration inward at the molecular level is going to be as grand as it is on the galactic level. Hey, do you know that the Earth was spared by 1 week of being incinerated to the point that no power system on Earth would work, no electronic appliance or your GPSs, your computer?
No, I didn't.
We came within a week of losing it all, of having trillions of dollars of infrastructure done where we would have gone. Even in the developed world, we would have gone for months without electricity. No stoplights wouldn't
work.
We came in 2012, we came within a week. NASA released the information just today that the solar storm that occurred in 2012 was the largest solar storm in recorded history, and that it passed through the Earth's orbit where the Earth was a week previous to the storm. In other words, had this storm taken place a week later, the Earth would have been so damaged that we'd been sent back to the Stone Age. Nothing that we have that is electronic or electrical would function. All fried.
Well, essentially, we'd all be without jobs.
That's correct.
And we'd be without cars.
Your telephone's not going to work. Your cell phone's not going to work. Your computer's not going to work. Your car's not going to work. Your appliances in your home are not going to work. Everything's fried.
I could have told them that wouldn't happen, though. I could have told them that.
Yeah. But that's
not there's a time and a place for
it
that.
It went through the Earth's orbit where the Earth was 1 week previous to the greatest solar storm in recorded history.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's how close we were to being sent back to the Stone Age.
Where did you read that?
Oh, it's all over the news. You know, for the Shattering Myths show, I read news stories, and I've taken the approach of, you know, I have too many stories for me to read the story anymore. So now what I do, read the story on the air. So what I'm doing is I'm reading 8 or 9 stories before we go on the air, and now I'm just sharing within the stories. But I read the 3 or 4 accounts from NASA that were all published by various periodicals today, all of which have the same information that the NASA released, that we were within a week of being sent back to the Stone Age. I missed that one.
Somehow in the flurry of work, I didn't even look at any news in the last week or two.
Yeah, it was only on, I have now like 25 news feeds, and it was one, a story was published on three of them. CBS News has it, that's the one I'm looking at. In fact, if you were to Google CBS News, here's the headline: Solar Superstorm Just Missed Earth in 2012. So CBS News is what I would Google, Solar Superstorm Just Missed Earth in 2012 is the thing to Google. But it's not just there. It's really all over. Many other news outlets covered it.
I'm looking at it here, CBS.
Yep.
Yeah, typically I get mine, I look at Drudge because it carries everything, you know. And of course, you go through Drudge and you look at it and you're like, wow, I'm watching the end of the world.
Yeah, you know,
every day.
I don't have Drudge. For some reason, Drudge isn't available on, because I use ProtoPage. I don't know if my homepage for Shattering Myths is called protopage.com, and I have a customized ProtoPage, and my ProtoPage has, BBC, Reuters, Washington Post, Fox, International Herald.
So it's
New York
like a
Times.
Drudge report type thing. Yeah.
I wish I could get Drudge. I would add Drudge to it, but they don't have Drudge. They've got CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, Yahoo, USA Today, Washington Times. Those are my sources.
Well, somebody might be getting serious here. The top of Drudge right now is the White House warns against impeachment.
Yeah, I know.
Wow.
They actually think
they're finally getting serious about this. They've been talking about it for 3 years.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
I
they would
they'd
actually
get rid of a guy
him
like,
on his
miles,
on
I'm
his
sure.
statements relative to Benghazi. He's vulnerable.
No,
he's
gone.
Really vulnerable
I mean,
on Benghazi. He's vulnerable on eavesdropping, putting the wiretaps on all of the Associated Press members, because
he's vulnerable on the running guns to Mexico.
He can also pass that one off on Bush. He's vulnerable on the taxation thing for the right wing against the Tea Party.
That
vulnerable
was
on his on. Everything he said about the Ukraine, he's vulnerable on everything that he has done vis-a-vis the Muslim Brotherhood and Egypt and the Islamic Reformation. He's vulnerable on almost everything he says today. Like he had a speech today called Economic Patriotism, where he told American corporations, you can't leave America, you've got to pay your fair share. You're going to be economically patriots as corporations.
That's a lovely way to put it.
You cannot leave America to cut your tax burden in half. You need to be economically a patriot.
but we'll be more than happy to pay for GM to go over to China or whatever.
Of course.
And we'll use tax dollars to do it. Why? Because they're tied in with us.
Because of the
you
union,
know,
yeah.
You were talking about Kiev. You know, there was a very, very, the most successful boxing team as far as brothers go ever were the Klitschko brothers, Vitaly and Vladimir Klitschko.
Uh-huh.
Both of them heavyweight world title holders. I think one was 64-2, and that's Vladimir, but Vitaly, he's older, and he, I think, went 46-2 or something like that. But he went over and became mayor of Kiev.
Uh-huh.
And what he said was that it is the most corrupt country in the world. That's what he said.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that if you were to take a clear evaluation of economic corruption, borrow money and don't pay it back and renege on the terms, and then you were to take political corruption, constantly having coups and changes, no one having any loyalty, and just being everything you say politically being untrue. Military corruption, any way one of those you want to take, the Ukraine or the corruption of being anti-Semitic. under any basis, the Ukrainians, that is the most corrupt country on earth. That for the United States to take on the Ukraine, to be a dependent, and to go to war against Russia on the Ukraine is so weird. It's so bizarre. It's so twisted. That, you know, when I speak on the freedom fighters, the ethnic Russians, it pains me to do so because they're not worthy of our support, but I still have to do it because of the United States rhetoric and malfeasance with Kiev. And by the way, you know, the Kiev government has cratered. It's completely cratered.
Oh, yeah, it's done.
It's done. They're having their third, breakup. They've cratered. There's no coalition to govern that country.
Well, I think the reason that Klitschko came out and said that, you know, their father was a major general in the Soviet Union Army, and they were both very bright guys. I know Vladimir had a PhD in sports medicine, and I believe Vitaly was very close to that. They're both brilliant guys, great chess players. They were wealthy. They could have taken another route, but they chose boxing, which is kind of a weird thing for you know, upper class people to do, but that's what they did. He went into the political arena with the idea of exposing corruption and changing. He didn't go in there for power and money. He had power and money.
Yeah,
and I think that's why he said it, but it didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, now
and
now
I think in the 2014 bid, he ended up backing the chocolate king over there.
You know? Yeah, but he is a scumbag, and complete utter lout.
Yeah, sure, he is.
And the prime minister underneath him is the guy that has had the conniption fit and resigned, and he resigned saying that here. We have outside forces, read the United States, who is taking responsibility financially for our bankrupt military and giving us the opportunity to go off and pummel the ethnic Russians into submission. And we're not fully capitalizing on what this outside influence is willing to pay for in terms of our military. And if we don't capitulate fully, they're going to stop funding our military. And then what? I mean, that's basically what he said in his speech.
Fund us to pummel our own people. It's just a very weird, and the United States is such an out-of-control monster at this point. I mean, how do you fund terrorist groups, Islamic terrorist groups, at the same time you're fighting Islamic terrorists? That right there, everybody, that's
supplying
that
the weapons
finished
to
the debate.
The Islamic State in Syria, and then supplying the weapons to fight them in Iraq, and partnering with the Iranians in Iraq to do it. I mean, how could you be that stupid?
How do you fund ISIS? I mean, come on.
Yeah,
you know, how do you do that? How could it, you know? I saw a video. I mean, they FB quickly removed it or Facebook, but they had this little boy who's been 5-6 years old, cut his body in half and held his head up and kind of manipulated his ripped up body around and just kind of threw it over in the floor and
The Islamic
you
State.
Go, you know, I don't want any part of funding anything like that. I mean,
but
under any set of circumstances.
We are the reason they exist. The Islamic
yes,
State
I
exists
know that.
Because of our weapons program in Syria and because of our overthrow of Saddam Hussein in Iraq. That's why they exist. And the Islamic State is here to stay. That is the most successful Islamic terrorist organization ever. The Islamic, you know, and we're still fixated with Al-Qaeda. The Islamic State is up between 100 and 1,000 times more influential in every possible way. Armaments, money, international appeal, governance capability, territory under their control. You name it, the Islamic State is between 100 and 1,000 times more influential than Al-Qaeda ever dreamed of being at their peak during the American-sponsored Afghan war. First Afghan, not second Afghan. Yeah, we're nuts.
Well, I let them speak for themselves. I'm not a part of it, but whoa.
Yeah, whoa. Yeah, well.
I think that's the word that he uses.
Yeah, whoa. Well, that's my dog saying it's time for me to feed her. So I'm going to go and take care of that. But
been a pleasure, Yad. I hadn't talked to you in a while. Not for
yeah,
Vaughn.
I was I was hoping that you weren't mad at me. That you were you just were under the weather there for a while or busy in business. You know,
well, I'm kind of a combination
of
too,
causing anybody to be mad at me. So I was glad that to see your name on the old
not going to happen.
Not going to happen.
Well, you have a good seventh, really. Really.
You too. Enjoy enjoy the Shabbat. You're so blunt and bold and so focused on just knowing who Yahweh is that you know. Genuinely, I enjoy your participation in both of those shows and the friendship that we have. You're a no nonsense guy, and that's the kind of a person that appeals to me.
Well, that means a lot to me. Really, it does. Your friendship means a lot to me. So, yeah, it's just thanks. Thank you so much.
I enjoy what we accomplish together. And one of the things, you know, I tell you, you're a great cover for me too, because my whole life, the thing that when I came to know the truth about Yahweh is always that I was so arrogant and so harsh and so unloving in my approach to it. And the very fact
and I can outshadow you in that regard.
Yeah, I know that that everybody now considers me soft and genteel by comparison to their.
I always look at you as the guy that would take people's heads off with a lawnmower. You know,
I
heard Joel say that.
Oh, with a chainsaw, not even think twice about it. I have never figured out why people think that I'm a nice guy compared to you. But man, I tell you what, it's been great for me. I haven't had anybody write since we've been doing things together. I used to get, before we started, I used to get
three
letters a week and say, you know, what you're saying is probably true, but you don't have to be so mean and belligerent and arrogant about it. And since we've been doing this together, I've not gotten one, not in the last two or three years.
Say, you want to get a harness on this guy up back here?
Still get letters say that you're Mr. Meanie. But
never
do they criticize me. So you've been a godsend, man.
It's pretty bad when they're running to you for cover.
I know. I think
they're in trouble.
Hey, you'll take what you can get, right? I think it's pretty funny.
Being a little less mean than me, let me tell you something, Greg. That's small praise. It's small praise. That's all I can tell you.
So you take whatever you can get these days, man.
Oh, yeah. Have a good one.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks. Good night. Bye-bye.
Good night. Bye.